A busy day, a crazy day, and yes, a bit of an unusual day here on the Steve Ahlstrom Show. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you. Here on the program today, we are standing by because President Trump is going to be convening a meeting of his cabinet members here in just a few minutes. And with so many incredibly important things happening in our country and worldwide that affect all of us here in the good old U.S. of A., I want to make sure that we get a chance to take that as much as we can here today. Got a number of things that have been planned and scheduled already that we're not able to move, nor should we, on some of the issues that we're going to be talking about here in the second half hour of the 9 o'clock hour here. But I do want to try to take a part of the president's cabinet meeting here today. We're obviously talking about a number of different things. We've got the DHS shutdown that's affecting TSA workers in the airports. By some measures, it looks like having the ICE agents in the airports is helping. And then there are some reports saying that wait times are actually getting longer in other places. I think we went through that fairly well yesterday and gave you some actual data from what's happening there. There's going to be noise, of course, anytime Donald Trump does anything or even doesn't do anything. And so you're going to see a lot of people taking positions and trying to create some reality there. I would urge you to do what I did yesterday and just go right to the data, what the airports are showing. It's not hard to search for that anymore. That's a very important storyline, so we're going to get some conversation about that. The SAVE Act continues to really struggle to get footing. This filibuster process that they started working on last week appears to have fallen apart, and nobody seems to know exactly what the next step is other than to say a lot of words about it. So we hope to hear a little bit about that here today as well. We certainly don't want to forget about what's happening overseas, where our men and women who serve our country are certainly going to be in harm's way. Many of them already are, and it looks like a few more are heading that way. So there are a lot of things that are going to be happening. That meeting was scheduled to start about 10 minutes ago, and we are waiting for that to begin. So we will dive into that as soon as that meeting begins here just in a few moments. Want to remind you that it's March 26, 2026, and the Minnesota State High School Girls Softball Tournament was still won by a guy. The good news is I've been saying this for about a year, and we are now only about, oh, maybe 2 months away from hopefully being able to never say that again, because we should never have to say that again. Based on what normal reality tells us versus what we have seen here recently. Coming up today on the program, Brenda Elmer will be with us. She is the executive director of the North Dakota Corn Growers Association. The Trump administration is going to now allow the E15 fuels, the higher ethanol fuels, to be sold year-round. They're going to lift their typical summer restrictions. So we want to ask, what does this mean to our farmers? And growers who put corn in the ground every year. Of course, this is a complicated discussion right now with fertilizer prices. You don't need fertilizer for soybeans the same way you do corn, so it may change a little bit. Although I've talked to a couple farmers who say, I think most people are still going to be doing what they had planned to plant because a lot of them have bought their fertilizer ahead of time, so it's not necessarily going to be as big of a deal. But some late buyers may choose to make a few changes. We're going to talk to Brenda about what this means. I think our corn growers have just been looking for different ways, different markets for their product. And if we can get more ethanol fuels, well, then that's a very good thing. So we'll talk to Brenda about that, what she expects this to mean. Can, you know, what has this done for corn prices and where are we going from here? These things, I always have to remind myself when these farm stories come out because as much as I care about it, I pay attention to it. I grew up on a farm. My daughter now is a farmer. I still at sometimes think, oh, okay, it seems a little just niche-y for the farm community. But when corn fetches you a good price, soybeans, wheat, all those things, the trickle down in our economy here in town, in the countryside, it is all a good thing. So we like it when those dominoes will fall. I am going to do story of the day today in the 9 o'clock hour, a little later than I normally do it. And story of the day for me is not a story so much as a narrative that I'm seeing more and more. Even the gay community in the United States is speaking out about trans kids and medical procedures. And this is very interesting to me. And I'm going to read to you a segment of an online post that was made by someone who is part of the gay community who says what we are doing to our children is criminal. So I think that's an interesting perspective we don't hear often. So we'll do that here on the program today. Best thing I heard all day coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, there was a hearing in the Minnesota State Legislature on Monday. And if it were not for a social media video from State Representative Krista Knutson, a Republican from the Bemidji area, I don't know that I would have ever seen anything about this. But I hope everybody in the state of Minnesota, everybody in the upper Midwest, and really all of us who are federal taxpayers everywhere have helped contribute to this in an unknowing way, because our tax money went to the federal government and then went to Minnesota, where it's now going to places overseas, and nobody was tracking where the money went, the money that was requested and transferred on computer systems. So they put it on for 2 weeks to track where the money was going, and then they decided to shut it down. Once they, knew or saw or understood that the system was quote unquote working. So I'm going to play you some of that today here on the program as well. And I did ask an IT guy about this, how uncommon is something like this? And the answer is basically a big old laugh. So we're going to do that today. Also coming up in the 10 o'clock hour of the program, I love interesting people and interesting stories. And I've got one for you today. A couple of friends are going to be joining me. One friend that is a very good friend over decades. The other I've not met, but I believe that I will consider Abouk to be a good friend by the time we finish up today. Abouk is a believer who has political aspirations in South Sudan, which is a new country detached from Sudan. She is a person of faith, strong believer, living in a Muslim world and trying to do great things for the world. And so this is a story I can't wait to learn myself and share with you as well. And then finally, before we finish up, Meta and Google, guilty of making their social media platforms too addicting for kids. This is something that there was a lot of conversation on yesterday, and we definitely want to take a look at what this means. I've got five key takeaways on that report that we'll share with you here as we go along the way here today. All right, let's get to the Morning Wire, semi-automatic storylines, going rapid fire to catch you up on some of the important pieces of information that you need to know to start your day. We will gain 3 minutes and 21 seconds of daylight today here in Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo. 7:48 will be our sunset time tonight. Markets off to a mixed start. Dow's up 51 points, but the NASDAQ is down 141. S&P 500 down 24. Now, at the beginning of trading today, all the indices were down pretty significantly, but they have been bouncing back very quickly, which is a good sign for maybe some future strength there. We'll see how the day finishes up. It's been a really weird week. Up, down, up, down. WTI crude oil today up another $3 a barrel at $92.80. The Brent price over $100 again. Gold down $107 an ounce. Silver down $3.46 an ounce. Remember, silver at one time was over $100 an ounce. Now at $69.18. Amazing how quickly that's fallen off. Bitcoin today, about where it was yesterday, $70,500 or so. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $3.98. That's up 2 cents from yesterday. North Dakota is at $3.43. South Dakota, $3.41. Minnesota, $3.43 as well. All right, while we're waiting for the president's cabinet meeting to begin, let's catch you up on some of the news headlines that it's important, I think, for us to know about. Let's start with the war in Iran. This is what I start with every day, because I think there's a tendency for too many of us, myself included, just to go about our day and we kind of forget. But we've got our soldiers, our Marines. I mean, we've got people all across the armed forces either in the Middle East or headed there. And we never want to lose sight of them, and we never want to stop praying for their safety, and that this mission would be accomplished quickly and with loss of life as much as possible. President Trump has issued a stern new warning for Iran's leaders to agree to a deal to end the war on his terms, quote, before it is too late. Iran continues to attack Persian Gulf states and Israel and still has the Strait of Hormuz in a chokehold, says CBS News. But Israel's defense chief says the Iranian naval commander responsible for that blockade was killed yesterday in a targeted airstrike. So how quickly can they rally someone on that next line to move up from the bench? And as thousands more are heading toward the region, more U.S. forces are heading toward the region. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt warned yesterday that President Trump would, quote, unleash hell on Iran if a deal is not reached to end the war. So that's the big story going on today. We'll give you more headlines as we come back. Steve Holsham Show continues right after this. We are waiting for President Trump to convene a meeting of his cabinet, maybe the most consequential cabinet meeting yet, with everything going on, SAVE Act going on, DHS being shut down except ICE, and of course the war going on in Iran. We will take that live when it begins. I want to remind you how much fun it is to save money. Now, maybe you don't need me to remind you of that. I think it's something we all really enjoy. When you can save $5 on something, you do it. And a lot of you I know are considering going over to the event coming up Saturday night, Capstone Classical Academy. I've had some emails and texts on this, so I know there are people out there who have not yet bought their tickets who are going to attend. Well, I'm telling you that the best way to do that is to do them here today or tomorrow, because at the door, prices go up by $5. Tickets start just $25 right now on am1100theflag.com, and there are still a few VIP reception tickets left as well. So am1100theflag.com, and you can click on the banner we have there, the Stacey Manning event, and you can get your tickets up front and get that taken care of now so you don't have to spend as much. If you're feeling overwhelmed raising kids in today's woke, ever-changing world, well, this is for you. And grandparents, this is for you, too. You can speak some truth into your grandkiddos' lives that will mean an awful lot going forward. It's tough to answer some of those questions that our kids have about culture, identity, and values. Even tougher to know how to bring some of this stuff up, because your kids might not bring it up to you. Well, you can learn how to do just that. Stacey Manning has written a book called Raising a Conservative Kid in a Woke City, and she's really good at giving parents and grandparents practical tools and confidence so that you can have those age-appropriate conversations with the kids and the grandkids there. Practical tools and confidence. That's the deal. Saturday night, 7 o'clock, it's at Capstone Classical Academy in Fargo. The program starts at 7 o'clock, VIP meet and greet at 6 o'clock. Get your tickets now at am1100theflag.com. And I have been told by the gatekeeper on this that I have two tickets right now that I can give away. So we're going to do that right now. Talk about saving money. Two tickets, yours right now if you're caller number 3 at 701-271-1100. Caller number 3, 701-271-1100 for the big event Saturday coming up at Capstone Classical Academy. All right, while we continue to wait for the president, I imagine that things are a little crazy in the White House these days. So not maybe a big shock that they've got some important things to take care of before they get together for the cabinet meeting there. Again, the big headline coming out of Iran this morning is that Israel says it has taken out the head of Iran's Navy. The reason that matters is that the head of the Navy is the one who has been kind of giving the orders on the Strait of Hormuz, where not just the fuel, but the fertilizer and all these products that have to get through that strait are being held up or basically scared from going through there right now. So whether this will loosen up those floodgates, I don't know. But this is going to be a very interesting next couple weeks or so to find out what that exactly means. There is a conversation that does not seem to want to go away about the Fargo police and the handling of the Angela Lips case. And when I say there's a part of this that doesn't want to go away, I think it's good to have this conversation, keep it going. But I have to tell you that while I have not always been a huge fan of the way Dave Zabolski has handled everything that has happened under his watch, and he's retiring, resigning, whatever, here at the end of the month, it seems like there's a kind of a big pile-on going on right now with Zabolski. And I don't know what to make of it yet, but Pete Nielsen and Jesse Johnner both went on the record yesterday saying that they were upset that they were not either notified or involved or something about Chief Zabolski's press conference, where he said, basically, hey, we've got some technology. They do over in West Fargo as well. But he's talking about how Fargo police was handling this. West Fargo was doing its own bit of work on this during the investigation of the case. They rightly determined that this woman was not a suspect. Fargo police struggled with that. And that's fair to criticize all that. But Now we're seeing some criticism of Zabolski for having a press conference and not coordinating better with West Fargo police and the sheriff's office. And I don't know if that's, if I'm just being honest with you, I don't know how much of that is, okay, something really wrong was done here, or if this is just kind of a pile on going on. And I, if there's a reason for that, I'm fine with it. But it really, I think more than anything else, I'm picking up pretty much more each day that Dave Zabolski does not seem to be a favorite within the law enforcement community there. So there's a big write-up on this on the website, WDAYRadioNow.com. And I'm just telling you, there must be more to this story than I understand, because it seems as though Cass County and West Fargo are offended by what Zabolski did. And from the reporting I've seen, I don't quite get that. So maybe I have to dig into this a little bit more. But safe to say that I think both of those agencies feel like they should have been consulted, that they should have been part of the press conference, even when Fargo was just talking about its own work. So maybe a few dots to connect there. I just think this is an interesting story there. We have another candidate who is in the race for the Fargo City Commission. And we have had a handful of people jump in on this race. Tony Gehrig, probably the most notable one, as well as several others as well. And I think all of them, from what I can tell, have been sort of moderate or right-leaning. This would be the first significantly left-leaning candidate in the race. Nikki Gullickson today, or yesterday, announced that she'll seek a spot on the city commission. She is in her second term on the Fargo School Board, and she says she's going to work toward a fiscally responsible budget, supporting a vibrant business community, engaging with residents if elected. There are five others vying for the three open spots now on the city commission. You got the mayor and then two termouts of the commissioners, Denise Kolpak and Dave Pepcorn. So you know that there would be somebody here sooner or later that would jump in that maybe looks at things more the way that a John Strand would look at them. So we will see how the voting goes with that. They had the third finalist for NDSU president on campus yesterday, Alan Smith. He is a former interim president at Utah State University. He was the last of the three finalists to speak and to meet the media there yesterday. Gave a public presentation yesterday afternoon in front of about 150 people or so. He says, "I would love the job because it's an institution moving in the right direction that is otherwise having a few challenges." So, yeah, it's been tough in higher ed. NDSU seems to be hanging in there. Good job by President David Cook, I think, to have led the university as well as he has. Smith says, if you want to ask me who I am, I'm a first-generation college student-athlete who ran track and cross-country, so he can't be all bad. Worked his way through, I did too, so that's why I said it. Worked his way through school with jobs at Wellness Center, youth sports camps, and video rental and VCR repair. Hey, I know the kids laughed at that, but I'm like, oh, if you're in that line of work, you know how to work for a living. No doubt about that. He's been at several higher ed institutions like Purdue, Michigan State, and Utah State. So all three in. Typically, you have the last person in that you kind of want to be the person, but we've not really heard any kind of rumblings about that. And finally, CBS News reports the population growth in the U.S. metro areas diminished nationwide last year, with those along the U.S.-Mexico border seeing the steepest drop-offs. So I guess no surprise there. This according to latest data from U.S. Census Bureau. Areas in Texas and Arizona saw the biggest drops. Laredo, Texas, Yuma, Arizona, and El Centro, California. No surprise there, as people were being deported or chose to leave the country on their own. When we come back, Brenda Elmer will join us from North Dakota Corn Growers. We're going to find out what yesterday's news means to corn growers. I had a friend who texted me during the commercial break saying, "Steve, I think the issue here was that West Fargo police in Cass County felt like they were being called out a little bit or mentioned specifically as to their processes and procedures, and the thinking of the leaders of those agencies is, if you're going to speak about us in that way, we should have been part of the event there yesterday a little bit." So, okay, good. More information on that. Like I said, I just need to know a little more because the reaction I'm hearing seems weird based on the news coverage I've seen on that. But that certainly helps put a little perspective to it. Hey, there's a really good deal going on right now on the big deals page at am1100theflag.com. We got golf clubs and we know how to use them. Know how to sell them, maybe. That might be a better way to say it. You can get a set of three PXG wedges. PXG, that's the Cadillac of golf clubs. It's called the Sugar Daddy 3 set. And three innovative sole designs to allow you the perfect fit. And if you win this auction, you'll get to go over to Sweet Shots and they'll custom fit you. So these are going to be perfectly set up for your swing. And it doesn't cost you any more for the fitting. So buy the golf clubs and you get the customization thrown right in there. Now, altogether, these would sell for about $1,000 in the store. However, the bidding is only, it started just a few minutes ago here at am1100theflag.com. And the bidding starting at just $200. So I'm going to take a quick look here and tell you that currently the bid for these golf clubs, if my computer wants to play nice with me today, which apparently it does not. Why is that happen? I could do this 100 times. Anyway, somewhere between $200 and $1,000 is where this will likely end up. I'll get you that number there. But bidding is underway, ends at 5 o'clock today. And hey, a lot of your golf game is dependent on what you do in the short game with those wedges. So check that out. And it's still at $200 right now. So here we go. Hey, who knows? You never know. Get yourself a great deal. am1100theflag.com. Click on Big Deals and look at those PXG wedges. They are dandies. All right, 34 past the hour here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. One of the biggest stories that hit the news cycle yesterday is that the Trump administration said that it will allow E15 fuels to be sold year-round, the higher ethanol blends. And they're going to lift the typical summer restrictions on them. And this is a move that's been made before at times, but really important right now, certainly with high gas prices due to the war going on in Iran. This type of gas, the E15, with ethanol blends up to 15%, typically restricted in the summer because it evaporates easily in the heat. And the climate crusaders will tell you this causes air pollution. All I know is that our corn growers need markets and places to sell their corn, and this cannot be a bad thing. To talk more about that, pleased to have on the program today, joining us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, Brenda Elmer. Brenda is the Executive Director of the North Dakota Corn Growers Association. Good morning, Brenda. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm good. Yourself?
I'm great. Thank you. So what was your reaction when you heard the news yesterday?
Well, we were really pleased to get it. We were anticipating it. You know, it is a temporary waiver, as you stated. We never take it for granted, but especially with all of the geopolitical events that are going on these days, you know, consumers need that access to the lower cost fuel. So we were really happy to hear the news.
Typically, when do the restrictions, so if they put them on during the summer, when do they typically come off and we can go back to selling it in the fall or the winter? When does that usually happen?
Yeah, I want to say May 1st. Not 100% certain on that, but okay. We usually look forward to it about this time of year. As we get into April and we haven't had that emergency waiver granted, we start to get antsy for the driving season. So it came just in time.
And when does that end then, in the fall or the winter? Like how long does it last before it typically gets lifted?
Yeah, it's fall.
Yeah, in the fall every year. Okay. Yeah. So what does this mean to Jimmy Corn Grower, who is out in the middle of North Dakota, trying to, you know, praying to the good Lord for a little higher commodity price every night? What does this mean to them?
Yes, well, it's certainly all about demand, and that's what our farmers need right now with this, you know, the trade war going on, and, you know, as I mentioned, the conflict in Iran and other things happening globally. And just the farm economy being significantly down, farmers need that demand. You know, the emergency waiver is a great thing. We are really pushing hard for the certainty of permanent year-round E15, because we just need that certainty, not only with the infrastructure, the refineries, the producers, but also at the farm level with corn demand. If year-round E15, Steve, were fully implemented permanently, it would demand 2.4 billion more bushels of corn a year in the U.S. And that is about as much as the entire state of Iowa produces every year, to give you a little context. That's significant. And right now, our growers are producing corn at a loss. You've seen the high input prices, fertilizer, pesticides, you know, land costs, fuel. And there's just no relief in sight there. So it really, you know, the emergency waiver, very happy, pleased for it. We were hoping for it, but we really need that certainty of the permanent.
2.4 billion bushels, that's a lot of corn. Where are we at right now on cash corn price, Brenda?
Oh, what are we at? I haven't checked it today, but, you know, it's been in the low $4.
Low fours, okay. What is that? So yeah. If we had that 2.4 billion bushels more of demand, what are we talking? Do we think we might be looking at a quarter a bushel more on cash price, 50 cents, a dollar? What would that do to us if we could get this as a year-round thing?
Do you know, it's really hard to say because there's a lot of things, you know, the market price that it depends on, but it certainly would help boost that demand, certainly with the price. We, you know, I mentioned the high input costs that farmers are seeing right now, but it is incredibly competitive. Brazil is one of our biggest competitors, not only in producing corn, but also ethanol. And, you know, we're just asking for the E15 to be allowed to be sold, for consumers to make the choice.
Right.
Not to mandate anything. There's no cost to the government for doing this. It's really a win-win. You know, and in Brazil, you know, they have pretty high E15 mandates at the pump. So their domestic demand there is really helping to fuel, you know, their corn and ethanol markets. And it's fiercely competitive.
Has this news, Brenda, what happened yesterday and the president kind of lifting the seasonal ban or whatever, did that move cash price markets at all for corn? What's happened in the last 24 hours since this happened?
Yeah, you know, it reacts to this kind of thing for sure. We're out there, you know, trying to impact it even more. We had a farmer there last week with a fly-in. He went to several House and Senate offices. We have a farmer out there today. There's a Celebration of Ag event at the White House tomorrow. So this is our constant message, trying to impact those markets, trying to create that demand for our U.S. farmers. And, you know, without it, we are really elevating, you know, other corn markets in other countries. And there's also talk of bridge payments, Steve, you know, a second round of bridge payments.
Yes.
And every farmer I talked to said, you know, they don't want a handout. They would rather just
right.
Get the strong markets driving that price up a little bit.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. When you take a look at what's happening with those who were raising corn in North Dakota and probably Minnesota, South Dakota too, this whole conversation about fertilizer prices being up with what's happening over in the Hormuz Strait over in the Middle East, moving fertilizer prices up, and a lot of people are wondering if this is going to mean more soybeans being planted, if less corn is going to be planted around North Dakota. What are you hearing from corn growers? Are a lot of them making changes in planting because of this, or have most of them got their fertilizer locked in ahead of time, or they're still going to follow through with it? What do we think that this all might mean to the number of acres or bushels raised in North Dakota this year?
Yeah, well, you know, even before yesterday's announcement, I think USDA had predicted that corn production would be down a smidge. And in talking to, you know, our board leadership from around the state and other farmer members, you know, they're about the same or maybe a little less. nothing too much out of the ordinary. A lot of factors there at play, but definitely these input prices really weigh on those decisions. And I imagine there are a lot of guys that, you know, will still be deciding, you know, right up until planting season.
Sure.
I did note last week there was a class action lawsuit filed on the fertilizer industry just for anti-competitive practices. And, you know, we'll be following that really closely because, you know, farmers need a relief from some of this. And there's very few players in that market in particular.
Right.
And
sure.
they're not looking out for our ag producers. So we need some relief somewhere, shape
okay.
or form.
What else do we need to know? Got about another minute left here. What else do we need to know about the executive order yesterday, what it means for North Dakota corn growers, or anything else related to that that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, it's just, you know, you've seen it, Steve. We just have gridlock in Congress, despite so many of the Midwest members of Congress, especially saying they support it. You know, we just can't get it through. We were hopeful that it would be in the House Ag Bill that was taken up earlier this month, but alas, it was not. So, you know, we're looking for that vehicle to put it on. We really want to thank Representative Fedorchuk especially for her support of biofuels, because she knows, you know, that's an economic driver for
right.
North Dakota. One of the ethanol plants, as you may know, you know, was acquired by Gevo, and they will be starting to make sustainable aviation fuel right here in North Dakota.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a whole other show that we could do. Brenda, we're just out of time, and I'm sorry that we don't have a chance to visit more, but let's maybe have that conversation another day, because it certainly sounds interesting. Thank you very much for taking the time to do that. Thanks for all you do to support the corn growers in the state of North Dakota.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, when we come back, story of the day, the president's cabinet meeting just began. All right, a little quick check of corn charts over the break here. It looks like what I'm seeing at a couple places, about a nickel is where cash bids went up yesterday. So 5 cents. But there's been kind of a nice bump since March 1st, maybe when it started to kind of get, you know, the tea leaves were telling us that this was going to happen. So it's moved up. It looks like, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 cents since the start of March. Those of you who are growing corn may be able to fill me in a little bit better on that. But that's what I think I'm seeing on the charts here. But yesterday got some pretty clear indications. We were about a nickel higher yesterday after the announcement. So we'll take it. We'll take it, right? Hey, you might see him cheering at a high school game or lining up a putt on the golf course. Matt Schultz isn't just one of the leading financial minds in the Bakken. He's your neighbor. Matt knows that behind every investment is a family and a dream, and that's why he takes a personal, all-things-considered approach to financial planning. It's practical advice you can trust. Get a financial plan as solid as the North Dakota ground we walk on. Call Matt Schultz at Midwest Wealth today in Watford City. Straightforward planning from a name you know. Online at RaymondJames.com/MidwestWealth. All right, the president started his cabinet meeting about 15 minutes ago. They were, I don't know, more than a half hour late, but hey, I guess we will understand, but we have been able to kind of cue up the beginning of that. So let's join President Trump from the beginning of his cabinet meeting here today.
So thank you to the incredible members of my cabinet. They're doing a phenomenal job. Everybody pretty much agrees to that, including our newest member, Secretary of Homeland Security, Mark Wayne Mullen. Thank you, Mark. We all know him very well, and he was a very popular senator, very effective senator. Effective probably being the more important word, J.D., don't you think?
Yes, sir.
And we wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you.
I think you'll do fantastically well. Congratulations, too. You have an amazing family that were here yesterday in the Oval, sworn in. His family's amazing, so thank you very much. We're now on day 41 of the disgraceful Democrat shutdown of Mark Wayne's department. Congratulations. They came into a department that shut down. Shut down by the radical Democrats. But Democrats are really punishing the American people. I saw it today on one of the shows where they were interviewing people at the airport, and they're all angry at the Democrats. They're saying they're actually angry at Schumer. I didn't think anyone knew his name. One woman said, that Schumer is disgraceful. He's a disgrace to our country. But they're angry at the Democrats.
Trump is funny. He just is.
The American people, including travelers at airports, all in the quest to return to open borders and give amnesty to illegal alien criminals. They want to give amnesty to some of the criminals that came into our country. Just about all of them, actually, if you look at it. They love sanctuary cities, which is a sanctuary for criminals. They want to make sure they're taken care of. That's what we're fighting about. That's really what they're fighting. They don't talk about that, but that's what they're fighting about. They want to protect criminals. In many cases, 11,888 murders. Many of them, I will say, are gone now because of us. We got them out. But still have some left. Should have never happened. Should have never been allowed to come into our country. But we're not going to let it happen. We're not going to let the Democrats get away with this stuff. And people are wise to them. So they need to end the shutdown immediately, or we'll have to take some very drastic measures. This morning, I want to give an update on the Operation Epic Fury, which is an appropriate name because we are absolutely obliterating them. Over the past 3 weeks, we've been hitting Iran's military capabilities at a level that few people have ever seen before. People never knew there was such a capability. We have the strongest military anywhere in the world by far. I built it during my first administration, and I used it during my second administration. Unfortunately, because I'd rather not have to use it. But it's a display of force and precision and skill like nothing the world has really witnessed, although you get a pretty good witnessing of it in Venezuela also. And that was a smaller version of what we're doing now. We're crushing their missiles and drone stockpiles, destroying their defense industrial base. We've wiped out their Navy completely, their Air Force completely. We've wiped out a large percentage of their missiles. And the missile launchers, without the launchers, you can't. The missiles don't do any good. And we've knocked out probably close to 90% of the launchers, probably more than 90% of the missiles themselves. Between some they fired and more than they fired, we knocked out. We've also destroyed a lot of the factories. We're continuing to do that, but a lot of the factories where they manufacture the drones and the missiles. The drones, too, are way down. But the reason they're down is they go one way and they don't come back, because for the most part, we're shooting them down. But we also are able to, we've really done tremendous damage to the places where they make them. And just so we set the record straight, because I've been watching the Wall Street Journal's fake news and all these stories that get printed like, oh, I want to make a deal. They are begging to make a deal, not me. They're begging to make a deal. And anybody that saw what was happening over there would understand why they want to make a deal. But they say, oh, we're not talking to them. Anybody would know they're talking. And only a total fool, and they're not fools. They're very smart, actually, in a certain way. And they're great negotiators. I say they're lousy fighters, but they're great negotiators. They are begging to work out a deal. I don't know if we'll be able to do that. I don't know if we're willing to do that. They should have done that 4 weeks ago. They should have done it 2 years ago. Or they should have done it when we first came into office, because 2 years ago they had free reign under Biden. Sleepy Joe. Worst president in the history of our country.
All right, we're going to pick it up from there on the other side of the top of the hour break, but we've got a few things we're going to need to do here in the next couple minutes. So far, just kind of overview of everything there. Remember when you used to listen to Joe Biden as a president of this country? I know that we pile on Joe Biden maybe too much sometimes for just how much he was losing at the end, but listen to the president. And the pace and how quickly his mind is moving between things, the humor he throws in there that's completely unscripted. And I'm just so thankful that we have an adult mind back in the room there. So, all right, we've got a top of the hour break. We're going to come back and pick it up from on the other side from there and listen to President Trump convening a cabinet meeting. We'll do that next. Congrats to Eric Nord. Eric is the winner of the tickets, the two tickets to the big show over at Capstone Saturday, Stacey Manning, How to Raise a Conservative Kid in a Woke World, and you can get tickets. I don't know that I think I actually will have another pair tomorrow, but I'm not 100% sure on that. Kind of depends on how the day goes, I guess. But get your tickets now at am1100theflag.com, am1100theflag.com, and you can click on the Stacey Manning banner there and get that taken care of. Tickets are going to be $5 more at the door. So save your money and get them. You're going to be glad that you did. This hour of the program is brought to you in part by JamesPatrickRealEstate.com. I didn't know that there was a realtor in Fargo who charges a lot less than everybody else. I thought everybody was kind of the same sort of pricing structure, or that there are more than 900 agents in the metro area, and most of them only close on a handful of homes a year. But I found out all about this when I talked to the gang over at James Patrick Real Estate. Dan Perrine is the main man over there. If you're selling, Dan is the guy. Good Faith Family Freedom guy. They are in the top 1% of all realtors in the MLS for homes sold. The top 1%. You think they don't know what they're doing over there? Come on now. More deals, sharper pricing, tougher negotiations, smoother closings, and no gimmicks. Just proven results, real commission savings. Call Dan, 701-540-3747, or visit jamespatrickrealestate.com. That's jamespatrickrealestate.com. We're clearing out some things I normally do here during the show today because we want to take as much of the president's cabinet meeting as possible. And so let's go back and join that where we left off at the end of the first hour.
The president should have done this. They should have done it a long time ago because you cannot give lunatics a nuclear weapon, and they would have had a big one. It stopped, really, when we did the B-2, but even before that, the Barack Hussein Obama, what he did where he gave them the Iran nuclear deal, gave them free will toward a nuclear weapon. Basically, he chose Iran over Israel and others that didn't want him to do it. But I terminated that deal. Had I not terminated that deal, you would have had a nuclear weapon years ago, and it would have been used, guaranteed. And one of the reasons you know about the guarantee is because their neighbors were sort of like bystanders. They weren't involved very much. They didn't choose heavy sides. They didn't want to because people were concerned with Iran. There was a big black cloud over the Middle East. They were concerned. But all of a sudden, the war starts, and they start shooting at these five, in particular, five countries. They start shooting at Qatar, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Kuwait, Oman. They start shooting at them, and they were everybody was shocked, including us. You know why? Because they're sick, and they had a plan to take over the Middle East. And some of those missiles that were shot at them were locked long before we even started this process. They were locked and loaded and aimed at those countries. They wanted to take over the Middle East, but we happened to come along, so it wasn't so easy. So right now their navy is sunk in the largest elimination of a foreign navy that has taken place, maybe ever, but certainly since World War II. Their air force is gone. Their anti-aircraft and communications capabilities are totally dismantled. And one of the problems they do have when they deal with us is we deal with people and the people aren't able to communicate with anybody else, so, you know, because all of their leadership has been gone. The first level is gone, and they met to pick a new level, and they're gone. They're all gone. Because they didn't make a deal, and because they're sick people. They're really sick. They're really sinister, sick people. And if anybody thinks it was okay to have a group of people like this, to have nuclear capability, nuclear weapons, and if we didn't attack with the B-2 bombers, they would have had a nuclear weapon within 2 weeks of that, maybe 4 weeks. But between 2 and 4 weeks, they were planning to have a nuclear weapon. If we didn't hit them at that time with the B-2 bombers, and one of the great air raids in history, maybe the greatest. Dark at night, no moon, no light, every single bomb hit its mark and just obliterated that place. So it's now buried deep under earth. And it was an amazing thing, but they would have a nuclear, and they would have used it without question. And you know that because why did they shoot all these countries that weren't even really involved with them? They weren't involved. They had no big problems because they're sick, because they want to take over the Middle East, not just Israel. Certainly Israel would have been the first on their list. They would have used nuclear weapons. A nuclear, you don't need too many of them, but they would have used a nuclear weapon on Israel, and they would have used it on the neighbors, and then they would have come after us. And if we had a weak president, they would have done great damage, but fortunately you don't have a weak president. I knew what was happening, and I think we've been proven right. You know, they took one missile, it went 2,500 miles. They supposedly didn't have a missile like that. They had no missile with that capability, but they shot the now famous Ireland, the island that the UK was very afraid to give us because they didn't want to get dragged in. But we don't want to get dragged into their wars either. You know? One thing we're very disappointed, I'll say it publicly, we're very disappointed with NATO because NATO has done absolutely nothing. And I've always said, 25 years ago, I mean, I was somebody that wasn't a politician, but I was always involved in politics and I understood politics. I said 25 years ago that NATO's a paper tiger, but more importantly, that we'll come to their rescue, but they will never come to ours. And I want you to remember that we said this. They didn't come to our rescue. Now they all want to help when they're annihilated. The other side is annihilated. They said, we'd love to send ships. They actually made a statement, a couple of them, that we want to get involved when the war's over. No, it's supposed to get involved when the war's beginning or even before it begins. We had the UK say that we'll send This is 3 weeks ago. We'll send our aircraft carriers, which aren't the best aircraft carriers, by the way. They're toys compared to what we have. But we'll send our aircraft carrier when the war is over. I said, oh, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. Don't bother. We don't need it. And we don't need it. And we don't need them. We estimated it would take approximately 4 to 6 weeks to achieve our mission. And we're way ahead of schedule. If you look at what we've done in terms of the destruction of that country, I mean, we're way ahead. Think of it. They have no Navy. And they had good ships. 154 ships have been shot down and are resting very nicely at the bottom of the sea. And we did that in a matter of less than a week. Because we have the greatest military in the world by far. Nobody even close. So we estimated it would take approximately 4 to 6 weeks to achieve our mission. 26 days in, we're extremely, really a lot ahead of schedule. The Iranian regime is now admitting to itself that they have been decisively defeated. They're saying to people, this is a disaster. They know it. That's why they're talking to us. And they wouldn't talk otherwise. But they're talking to us because they've got a disaster in their hands. They're defeated. They can't make a comeback. We're free to roam over their cities and towns and destroy all of their crazy nuclear weapons and missiles and drones that they're building. And we're doing that. They now have a chance to make a deal, but that's up to them. And they'll tell you, we're not negotiating. We will not negotiate. Of course they're negotiating. They've been obliterated. Who wouldn't negotiate? They are begging to make a deal. We'll see if we can make the right deal. And if they make the right deal, then the strait will open up. Hormuz Strait will open up. And even now, we don't know if there are any mines. You know, they have 22 mine, they call mine droppers. Think of it. Who would have 22 mine droppers? This is a boat that drops mines. Who has 22 mine droppers? Except for people with very evil intention. So every one of those mine droppers has been struck with the same weapon we used to stop drugs from coming into the United States of America. When we hit those boats, it's the exact same weapon, extremely effective. We have unlimited supplies and extremely effective. But they have no more mine droppers. By the way, speaking of drugs, we're 98% down drugs coming in by water, by the ocean, by the sea. 98%. And we're trying to find out who are the 2% because we think they're the bravest men anywhere in the world. Maybe women. But whoever's on those boats is very brave or doesn't watch television. But we're drugs coming in by sea, coming in by water, are 98% down. And now we'll stop the drugs coming in by land. The land is the easy one. You got to stop the water. A lot of it came in through the water. Now it's all pinched. And these people are trying to come in by land. And we will. That's the easy one. But we had to take care of the water first. Nobody's coming in. Virtually nothing is coming in anymore. It was hundreds of millions of dollars a week were coming in by water. But they now have the chance, that is Iran, to permanently abandon their nuclear ambitions and to chart a new path forward. We'll see if they want to do it. If they don't, we're their worst nightmare. In the meantime, we'll just keep blowing them away, unimpeded, unstopped. Well, there's not a thing they can do about it. They can't do anything about it, you know? I tell you, if they could, you'd be hearing about it. You'd be hearing about it. You don't hear anything about it.
All right, let's break there. We will pause the play button again, and we will pick that up on the other side of the break here coming up in just a moment. With our statewide network that we do for the show, we don't have much choice anymore. In the old days of the Steve Hallstrom Afternoon Show, we had a little bit more flexibility. We do not. One of the big comments so far from the president, he said the stock market reaction and the oil market reaction to the war in Iran, not as severe as he expected. He called it a conflict. I guess I use the term war, but not as severe as he expected. And when he said that, markets dropped about 100 points. Dow is now in negative territory, minus 81, probably just a coincidence, but I thought that was interesting. All right, when we come back, the president will continue giving his comments on what's happening in Congress as well as the war overseas, and looks like J.D. Vance will be next up. So we'll do all that as we continue on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Live from the Drive with Vision Studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton, 15 minutes or less to buy a new or really nice pre-owned car, truck, or SUV. We're going to go back to President Trump's press conference here in just a moment. First, though, I want to let you know that if you got a pile of junk to get rid of, the gang at Roe and Joe Junk Haul and Removal, they would love to help you out. My friend John Minton runs that company. It's family-owned, veteran-owned, locally owned in the Red River Valley as well. When it's got to go, call Roe and Joe, whether it's commercial, residential cleanout, Maybe you've got a little bit of light demolition to take care of to get it, everything ready to take it out. They can do all that for you. Don't trust the out-of-towners, the 1-800 numbers. They don't know how John and his team gets it done. And there's some sincerity you get doing business with local people. They really care because they're putting their family's name on every job they do. Go to RowanJoeJunk.com, R-O-E-N-J-O-Junk.com. Get it out of there. Give them a call. It doesn't cost anything to get an estimate and get that pile of mess out of there before you have to look at it for another summer. All right, let's go back to the White House. President Trump is holding a meeting of his cabinet members right now.
Then Steve is going to speak, and Scott will speak last. And if we have any questions, we'll take some questions. You may have questions. I doubt it, but you may have some.
So, Trump's in fine form today.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. It's good to see everybody. Proud to be part of this team. Proud to be serving the president of the country. Let me just say a couple things. The first of all is the president summarized this very ably. But look, the Iranian conventional military is effectively destroyed. They don't have a navy. They don't have the ability to hit us like they could have even a few weeks ago. And what that does is that gives us options, Mr. President. Now, there's been a lot of reporting about diplomatic options, about negotiations. There's, of course, Pete and his team. There are further military options. But what we have now that we didn't have when the president took over just a little over a year ago is the ability to use every tool at our disposal to ensure that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. Because when I say options, I think it's important the American people know options for what? And it's options to ensure that Iran never has a nuclear weapon. You talk about people who walk into a crowded supermarket and have a vest on, and they blow up the vest and a couple of people get killed, and that's a terrible tragedy. What happens when what's on the vest is not something that can kill a couple of people but can kill many, many tens of thousands of people? That is the most important American national security objective that exists for any administration at any time, is you don't want the worst people in the world to have a nuclear weapon. That's why the president is doing this. That's why the president cares so much about this particular issue. I'll let Steve talk a little bit about the details of the negotiation, but the last thing I'll say before I turn it over to Marco is I'm very mindful, of course, that we have a lot of folks overseas fighting very ably for the United States of America. I know Pete and the whole team, we're very proud of them, but they're fighting at a time where we are about to enter as Christians the most important week of the Christian calendar, the Holy Week that celebrates the return of Jesus Christ to Jerusalem. And so I want to say to all of my fellow American Christians, but particularly those serving in the Gulf, that I wish you all a very blessed Easter, a very blessed Holy Week, and we continue to stand behind you and continue to support you every step of the way. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Marco?
The most important job any president has is to keep the American people safe. And every president says it, but we have a president that means it and does something about it. As the president outlined very clearly to the world on the night this operation began, Iran has been at war with the United States for 47 years. For 47 years, Iran has been killing Americans and attacking Americans across this planet. And other presidents had an opportunity to do something about it. And they all warned about how Iran was dangerous, but they refused to act. And this president's not someone that's going to refuse to act. He's not going to leave a danger like this in place. He's going to address it, and that is what he is doing. From the very first night of this operation, the president made it very clear. People like this, and now what I'm talking about is not the people of Iran. The people that run this country are radical Shia clerics. These are religious fanatics. Look what they are doing now, at their weakest point. This is the weakest Iran has ever been, and look at what they're doing. They're attacking embassies. They're attacking hotels. Imagine what these people would do if they had a nuclear weapon. That is an unacceptable risk for the world. By the way, the president's not just doing a favor to the United States and to our people. This is for the world. He defined very clearly on the first night of this operation what the goal was. We were going to destroy Iran's navy, and that is happening. We were going to, if it hasn't already happened, I'll let Pete speak to the specifics of it. We were going to destroy their missile launching capabilities. We're well on our way to achieving that goal. We were going to destroy the factory so they couldn't make more missiles and more drones. And that is moving forward. Every single objective the president clearly laid out on the first night of this operation is being effectuated. Again, Pete will speak to the specifics of it. This has been an incredibly successful operation. Every day, it may not get covered because, you know, we're not bombing embassies and hotels. We're hitting military targets. But every day, the Department of War lets the drummer get wicked over every portion of Iran that has these military capabilities, and the results are going to bear fruit for the world. The world is going to be a safer and a better place when President Trump's mission here is achieved. And frankly, I think countries around the world, even those that are out there complaining about this a little bit, should actually be grateful. Yeah. that the United States has a president that's willing to confront a threat like this and not allow it to continue to persist. Because these people will kill as many Americans as they have a chance to do, and if they have a nuclear weapon, as the vice president pointed out, they could kill millions of Americans in the future, and that is a risk that was not going to continue to exist as long as we had this president.
Thank you, Marco. You know, it's very interesting because yesterday I was watching, is it Anthony Blinken? And he was saying that they should have done it. But they didn't do it. Nobody did it. Nobody did it for 47 years, Marco. That's the number, 47. I guess now it's 48 because we've been saying 47 for a long time. It's probably 48. But for 47, 48 years, every president should have done this. And some are saying now that they made a big mistake in not doing it, but we're taking care of business. Steve Witkoff, please.
Mr. President, it is my distinct honor to be a member of your cabinet and to report to you and your team on our negotiations with Iran. Mr. President, you directed Jared and I to pursue a diplomatic resolution with Iran prior to Operation Epic Fury, which we did. However, it became quite clear during these meetings with the Iranian negotiating team that we could not make a deal that fulfilled your objectives of the following: no enrichment whatsoever, no chance of weaponizing whatsoever, decommissioning of Fordow, Natanz, and Esfahan, which you destroyed in Operation Midnight Hammer, no stockpiling of any material, which they flagrantly violated, turning all enriched material over to us, and a cutback in Iran's missile inventory and range capability of those same missiles. Throughout our meetings with the Iranians, we heard the following from them. The Iranians have the inalienable right to enrich. Then we heard they possessed enough 60% enriched material, 460 kilograms, to make 11 atomic bombs. Finally, we heard the following statement. They would not give up diplomatically what we could not win militarily.
Okay, we're going to push a pause button there, and we'll come back and pick that up. Some really interesting intel coming from what we now know about what Iran's capability truly was at the start of this war. So we'll do that as we continue. But when we come back here on the program, we're going to get a chance to introduce you to a couple of people that have a wonderful story to tell. I love interesting people and interesting stories. I know that you will too. We'll do that as we come back here on the Steve Hallstrom Show on AM 1100 The Flag, WZFG, AM 1090, KTGO in Tioga, mobile app, smart speaker as well. And don't forget that we podcast every show on your favorite podcasting platform, Spotify, Google Play, whatever your podcast platform is. Catch us there. Back after this. Have you had breakfast yet? Okay, I know it's 10:30, but I know some of you get up about this time because you're working second or third shift. Whether you're looking for breakfast, lunch, supper, whatever you got going, PetroServe USA has got great home-cooked meals for you, and every day they've got specials. That means not only you get great home-cooked meals, but you save some money. What could be better than this? So here are the specials for today at PetroServe USA. In Valley City, they got the lasagna, chicken fettuccine in Harwood, West Main Avenue tater tot hot dish or beef tips, 12th Avenue cheesy beef potatoes, in Euland chicken pot pie, 45th Street chicken fettuccine. Over in Castleton, they've got the tater tot hot dish as well. Chipped beef today in Glendon, chicken pot pie in Wahpeton. And by the way, when you stop by there, you get the great treats and the goodies as well. Fountain drinks and all that good stuff. PetroServe USA, helping America fuel better. Well, I know this audience well enough to know that you appreciate a good story and someone of interest as much as I do. And I want to welcome to the studio a good friend of mine, Randy Russin. We've been friends for a long time. We were in a Bible study 100 years ago. He's much younger than me, but it was still 100 years ago somehow. He's a good faith, family, freedom guy. Recently told me about somebody he met that the world should know about. And so I'm glad to have Randy and his friend Abukin with us today. Welcome, Randy. How are you, man?
Yeah, thanks so much, Steve, for having us on. Appreciate you.
Yeah, well, introduce your friend to us. Tell us about Abuk.
Oh, I'd be glad to. Yeah. Sitting next to me is Abuk. I met Abuk over at Eventide Cheyenne Crossing, where my mother is a resident in the long-term care unit there. And Abuk is one of the health care providers over there. And as I was walking around the facility, wheeling my mom around I've had a chance to meet and pray for some of the care providers over there and some of the residents. And Abouk stopped me, and just out of the blue, she said, Pastor, she thought I was a pastor. I'm not a pastor. She said, Pastor, would you pray for my people in South Sudan? And I said, Abouk, it's so interesting that you mention that, because I had just read an article by Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council about some of the happenings over in Sudan and the trouble and some of the violence that's going on over there. I said, Abouk, I've already prayed, and I'll continue to pray. And over the course of the following days and weeks, I got to know a little bit about Abouk and about her interesting story that she has growing up in Sudan, and later as Sudan, South Sudan became a nation of their own.
Back, what, about 15, 20 years ago,
about
right?
15 years ago. Yes, that's correct. And so Abouk had a chance to share how she has plans at the end of March to actually leave for a couple months for South Sudan. And she was so wanting to bring some medical supplies. When we say medical supplies, just over-the-counter medical supplies for people who really have no way to treat even common diseases, infections of the sort.
Okay. So Abouk is a believer. She has political aspirations. Her father was in politics and maybe even considering running for president someday in South Sudan. So Abouk, welcome to the show. Tell me a little bit about growing up, where you did, and how you found your way to the U.S.
Thank you, Mr. Steve, for letting me to come here to your show. I am so grateful to God Almighty for making a way out for me to meet very important people, and also to give thanks to all of African and American and the way they welcome us to the United States. I am so blessed to be in America. The way we came to America, we start going to Syria, Damascus, Syria, with my husband. And we had our first daughter, and we came to America in 1999. And then we just went to Buffalo, New York. That's where we relocated. And then we went to school there. We went to community college. I had my associate degree in liberal arts. And then I went to university. I had my bachelor in gynecology, which is concentrated in elderly, to help elderly people. And that's why I'm still concentrating.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I went to Duval College to have my RN in nursing. And also I was still continuing to be a nurse practitioner. They told me to get a few classes so I can be a nurse practitioner.
Wonderful.
And then from there I left. I went for my master's degree to get public administration so I can help anything that has to do with humanitarian. Because I always love people. I want to do something good to my people.
Sure.
And not only my people. I always want to help all over the world, all over who I needed. That's what my heart was telling me, and God, my God was telling me that always, to be a helper to the helpless.
So how did you find your way to Fargo?
My husband came here 2 years before we got here. There was one of his friends told him that they got a nice job here.
Okay.
So he came to apply so he can work. He was actually coming to work at Bobcat, and he went there. He did not get the opportunity.
Yeah.
So he went to CNH. So he worked there for 2 years.
Okay.
And then
so he's found some good work here in our community.
Yes.
Yes. But before we get to what you're doing, bringing pharmaceuticals back, a couple of questions I think our audience will care very much about. You are a believer. You are a Christian in a place where Islam is the predominant religion, and this the two don't always coexist very well. What was it like, and how did you get to know the Lord growing up in a community where it was predominantly Muslim?
I was brought up in a Christian way in a place called Awil, that northern Barakazal. We had an orphanage. The lady just passed. Her name Sidonia Amantong. She built a school for orphanage. And that school, I was among of the kids in the boarding school. Because my dad had 20 wives, because he's the chief council of South Sudan. So among 20 wives, my mom, she's the first one. And she lived in a village. And some other women, they are in the city. So my dad put me in a boarding school where the orphanage is. That's how I grew up. And that orphanage They got the church in there.
There's
a church in there. I was baptized in that church, the Catholic church. I was baptized in that church, and I went to school there.
Okay, interesting.
I finished my primary school there.
Okay.
And then from there, I went to WOW. WOW is another state in northern Barcazal. I went for my intermediate. I went there, and then I came to Khartoum to finish my high school.
So you got to know the Lord there.
I got to know at the early age. They even taught us to study Bible, to read the rosary every evening.
Okay.
We pray every morning. That our mother, Sidonia Mantong, taught us very well. We pray every morning, every night.
Wonderful.
Anytime. He taught us how wonderful God is.
Yes, amen. Yeah. Let me ask you this. So tell me about the government of South Sudan. Right now, the U.S. is at war with Iran, which is a country led by Islamic fundamentalists, a terrorist regime. How is it different from that in South Sudan and maybe just Sudan as a whole before the split?
Yeah, before we was under pressure for the war going under more than 5 decades. But after we become independent, 2011, we had our country. And everything is going well except our economy is still poor. We still can't afford to run everything like the way you guys run things here in America or in other parts of the world.
South Sudan needs a little bit of America over there.
It's a little bit of America. Even our first language there, we made it to be English.
Oh, okay.
And because we have many languages.
Sure.
We are 64 tribes.
Okay.
And every tribe, they got their own language.
Okay.
And we
is it a democracy or is there a king or how is it ruled?
It's not a king. I believe it's a democracy, but the way they're running it, because since we become independent, it was only one person leading.
Mm.
And we are still working on it.
Okay.
Let another person head.
You don't have a Congress or a legislature or anything like that? It's kind of just one person ruling?
One person is ruling, but we got governor. We got the whole state like the way we run it here in America.
Okay. There are different states, but kind of one leader overall.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you think of this president that we have in this country, President Trump?
I like President Trump. The reason I like him, they got so many other good about it, but the reason, first thing I like about him is him putting religion back to school and also cut off the abortion. And also cut the lesbianity and gay, that's what I don't like. And I appreciate him for that. And that's the reason I talk to my community to vote for him. So there will be no gay. I don't want to judge. I'm a Christian. I don't want to point finger. But I like him because he's doing the right thing.
And
he's teaching our kid to know God, and especially killing innocent child.
Yeah.
If the generation continue doing that.
He certainly is sensitive and appreciative of the things of religion.
I appreciate him for doing that.
No question about that.
Yes.
Yes. So are you, Randy told me that you may be interested in having some kind of a leadership role in the government back at home at some point.
Yes, I'm a paramount chief. I'm still now in the role.
Say that again.
A paramount chief of South Sudan.
You're a parliament chief?
A paramount.
Paramount.
Chief of South Sudan. That means the head of chief.
Okay.
Yes, I'm the president of chief. My dad used to be a president of chief.
Okay. And what is a chief? Is that like a state?
A chief is kind of like prime minister.
Okay.
So paramount chief.
Yeah. Paramount chief. Thank
you,
Randy.
The role. The role, we work with the government.
Okay.
We are the ears of the country. Anything doesn't go well, we go to the president and we tell him what's going on.
Okay.
And what can be
wonderful.
Done.
Wonderful. Yeah. Good. Well, we wish you all the best.
Yeah.
Tell us what you're doing here about trying to bring some pharmaceuticals back home.
Yeah. I have a hospital there my dad built before he passed. And that hospital, seen my dad die, no one funding it anymore. Things are going slow. And that hospital was a big dream for my dad to be able to help the country with a good medical supply, good doctors, and everything.
Very good. So how can people help? And Randy, if you want to jump in here, please do. But how can people support you and what you're trying to do?
I need support in many ways, in many areas. I need support with clean water, with food, with clothing, with medical supplies. People can reach out to Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They can reach out and they can help.
Okay, Randy, tell us how you can be a wonderful go-between, so let us know how people can get a hold of you.
Well, I had a short runway when Abuk told me about leaving for South Sudan at the end of March. I had found out about that about 2 weeks ago. So I immediately started contacting people I knew, and we began just scouring to find out what would be the most needed over-the-counter supplies that we could get and we could send back with the book for her people. You got to remember that in South Sudan, if you have an ulcer, if you have a cut or a laceration, that can very easily turn into something a lot more serious because they don't have the means to be able to treat that in a way that we would treat it over here.
Sure.
We would go down, we would put antiseptic on, we put a Band-Aid on,
gotcha.
And we'd be taken care of. They don't have that there.
Okay.
So we started ordering supplies. We made up a list on Amazon for medical supplies for South Sudan. We've been gathering supplies at my home. We've got a room full of supplies that we're sending back with
okay.
the
book. Great.
Mostly over the counter. And I would love it. Many of you who are in
We've got about 30 seconds left here. So phone number or
yeah,
website.
Many of you who are listening right now to Steve's show, you probably have ideas for what you could feel that would be important to send over there. My number, if you could give me a call or text me, is 210-540-5517. I'd love to be able to connect with you and to just tell you about some of the over-the-counter pharmaceuticals
Very good.
We're still
Randy, Abouk, thank you for being here. God bless you, sister, for what you're doing. Steve Hallstrom show back after this. $40 an hour. $40 an hour. That's pretty good pay. That's what you get at Vision Ford Lincoln. That's what they pay their technicians. No weekends, full benefits. Put your service career in overdrive. Drive with vision.com. $40 an hour. Now, that's what we're talking about there. DriveWithVision.com, and you'll be able to find out why everybody's talking about them. And if you need a new vehicle, no better place. DriveWithVision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. North Dakotans are some of the hardest workers in the country, but right now the state gets paid before your family does, taking a cut of your hard-earned money before you ever see it. That's why Americans for Prosperity North Dakota is fighting to eliminate the state income tax entirely. Time to put you back in control of every dollar you earn. No more letting the government take its first cut. You deserve the freedom to prioritize your family's future, not the state's budget. Nine of them have already eliminated their state income tax to attract jobs and families. Let's do the same in North Dakota. Visit AFPND.org to learn more and join the movement. That's AFPND.org. Let's go back to the White House President Trump holding a cabinet meeting amid the Iran conflict and the DHS shutdown as well. Let's check back in with that.
Well, sir, as always, you're a tough act to follow, but that is very illustrative. Your economic leadership has made our military mission possible. Mr. President, national security, as you always say, is economic security. Your leadership has shown the American people that there is no prosperity without security, that our mighty military on one side, but the U.S. economic strength is fighting off this evil regime. The Iranians believe they are fighting a two-front war. It is the military war that our great warriors are prosecuting. But on the other side, they are trying to take control of the global economy through a choke point that we believe does not exist and that we will overcome. Your historic operation at Epic Fury seized a generational opportunity to demolish a regime that has coordinated over four decades of global terror and claimed thousands of American lives. Many people, especially the Democrats, underestimate the will of the American people for short-term volatility for 50 years of safety that we are going to have on the other side of this. Mm-hmm. And I believe energy prices will be lower. Inflation will be lower before we had the appearance of security, which is not real security. Now, the American people and the world will have absolute security. Through your maximum pressure campaign, Treasury has worked to uncover all financial lifelines through the regime and cut them off. You gave that order last March. This was not something that happened overnight. This is something that has been contemplated for almost a year. They're finding that the Iranian financial system collapsed in December. We have systematically weakened Iran's ability to fund operations and procure weapons, and that required months of preparations. Threats to American national security have no place in the global economic system. The oil market is well supplied. We have taken actions to ensure oil supplies stranded at sea are made available to the global market. Your bold actions, like the Development Finance Corporation's Maritime Reinsurance Program, in conjunction with Central Command, will soon provide shippers through the Gulf region with a level of security we had never seen before. Mr. President, we are starting to see more and more movement in and out of the Gulf today, and this is more than yesterday, and this is the beginning. I am confident that shipping traffic will continue to increase on a daily basis, even before we secure the straits. Turning to the home front, the U.S. economy remains strong. We had a strong economy thanks to you. We are the best insulated in the world thanks to your energy efforts in Term 1 and Term 2. The U.S. is an energy superpower. American workers' purchasing power is finally being restored. The latest figures indicate robust real compensation increases. We are starting to see the working family tax cuts benefits bearing fruit this tax season. 44% of tax returns have claimed at least one of your signature policies, no tax and tips, no tax and overtime, no tax and Social Security, deductibility of auto loans. The average tax refund is up more than 10% for working Americans. The economy you vitalized through your pro-growth policies is well positioned to withstand these temporary disruptions. The United States dollar has reasserted itself as a safe haven asset. The U.S. dollar has appreciated since the hostilities began because everyone knows, thanks to your efforts, the U.S. economy is the best positioned in the world and capital is flowing in. Efforts to reprioritize economic security are ensuring the United States remains secure, resilient, and prepared for the challenges ahead. As we approach the 250th anniversary, America will be safer and more secure militarily and economically.
Okay, we'll end it right there. And there is more to come on this one. You'll be able to find that YouTube will have... the whole thing for you, so you'll be able to catch the parts that you missed there. That was interesting. 44% of tax returns are claiming one of those new deductions or one of those new incentives. So that was one of the notable nuggets there from Scott Bessent. All right, that'll do it for the Steve Holsham Show today. A little bit of a different show today, but I thought it was important to try to bring you as much of that cabinet meeting as we could. These are very important times, changing times, dramatic times. Keep on praying for our country, our president, our leaders. Have a great day. Stay tuned. Scott Hennin's coming up next. What's on your mind?